Hello, this is Andy Heyer with Dorsey Wright Money Management. Today is Tuesday, January 28th. I'd like to welcome you to our podcast. I'm joined by Mike Moody, who's our Senior Portfolio Manager. Welcome to the podcast, Mike.
Thanks, Andy.
So for this podcast, we wanted to have a discussion about making contributions to accounts. I think at this point, people are very aware that 2013 was a great year in the stock market. And one of the topics that comes up in many of the conversations that I'm having with advisors is, my clients are happy with the market last year. They're happy with their accounts. Now the question, how should they go about adding to their accounts? A lot of people that I've talked to are nervous that the market's high, and they ponder what is the best way to go about adding new money into the account. And this is actually a topic that Mike and I and the members of the team here have discussed many times. So I thought it would be good to kind of dig into this. And let me start by just asking your general thoughts on the topic. As people look to decide how to move new money into the market, what are the best practices from your perspective?
Well, I think there are two general ideas. One would be a time-based kind of situation where you add on a regular schedule like an automatic investing plan. And the other would be opportunistic, which would be where you're kind of trying to buy dips. And I think both are valid. And I think both are useful. And I would recommend people do both, right? As long as it's done in a systematic way, I think both will help.
You know, I think that makes sense because one of the potential problems that I see with looking to do it on an opportunistic basis, waiting, you know, maybe they're looking at various indicators, waiting till something is very washed out, and you know, then they'll once whether it's the bullish percents or the IRS diffusion index that we track regularly, whatever the index is, they're looking at the high low index. You know, the challenge that I see with using that is the only means of moving money into the market is what happens if you get a long stretch without one of those pullbacks and you end up waiting 3 years or whatever before you move the money into the market. You keep the money in your checking account and you end up spending the money by the time the opportunity comes back around.
I think that's right. I mean, I think a time-based thing is good for that exact reason. When John and I have tested it, if you wait and do only opportunistic additions, as you point out, there are stretches where the market runs up and you're not in. And so it actually, without adding any money all the time, it underperforms. On the other hand, there was a piece I wrote in the blog, I think back in 2012, called 294 Chances to Screw Up. And what it was about were the 294 5% dips in the market since 1928, I think, and Wells Fargo had written a piece on it. And it ties in very well with the Dalbar data that show that investors underperform routinely, and they underperform because instead of buying the dips, they tend to sell the dips. So this is a way where there's typically a 3, 4, 5% difference in market return and investor return that's entirely due to behavior. So if you look at some of those dips and you use, as you pointed out, you can use a simple indicator like the 10-week S&P 500 indicator that's on Dorsey Wright's website and look for, let's say, reversals from below 40%. There were three of those last year. I think on June 25th, September 3rd, October 10th, the actual lows were June 24th, August 27th, and October 8th. So you didn't hit them exactly, but on those dips, you got more money to work. And if that's in addition to a routine ongoing, you know, savings plan, then you get a little extra bang for your buck.
The when those opportunities come around, when you get a dip in one of those indicators, and you know, we actually just had one of the indicators that we track, the HireS Diffusion Index, which takes the top quartile of our relative strength ranks, measures which percentage, what percentage of them are trading above their 50-day moving average. The one-day reading got down to 40 before, or it hit 40 yesterday, so it was as low as it's been in quite a while. So that's one of those opportunities where you've got a dip in the indicator. You know, we had a pretty hard sell-off last couple trading days. Again, I think due to recency bias, people see one of those pullbacks and they extrapolate the past couple of days, you know, for the next 5 years, and just assume the market's going straight down. So they're like, "Yeah, this is great. The indicator's down, but I'm not adding money." And so, again, that is for the percentage of clients who will capitalize and use those opportunities to add money in. Great, and their returns will probably be higher. I think, as you and I have discussed this, I think your own personal way of doing it is you do use those indicators and use those drawdowns in the different indexes to stuff in a whole bunch more money. Whereas I kind of take a different approach. I, you know, anytime I got money coming in, I just stick it in the market.
Yeah, and you're right. I do both. I mean, I put money in on an ongoing basis. But when I get like the 10-week S&P 500 indicator below 40, which, as you point out, it is again, although it hasn't yet reversed up, I try to stuff more in. The problem is if you rely only on that, and especially for clients, is by the time it gets down low, they're scared.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't always put money in. The point, though, is that, and John Bogle points this out all the time, right? The return of the market has to be equivalent to the return of all investors. We know from Dalbar data that mutual fund investors, retail investors, the regular public, significantly underperform. So to have that balance out and equal market return, someone's outperforming. And quite frankly, it's the people that are buying the dips. Mm. That 4% that typical retail mutual fund investors are not getting is going in people's pockets who are willing to buy the dips, and that can make a significant difference in your return. If you think about it, there's a 4% lag for the typical retail investor, and you can turn that into 4% outperformance. That's 8% better than the average retail investor and a lot better than the market. But you have to be willing, as you point out, to step up to the plate and put money in when you're uncomfortable.
One of the things that gives me some confidence about buying the dips in this environment is the context. And we look at everything through the lens of trend and relative strength. And the trend of the broad market is higher. Higher highs, higher lows. And so until proven wrong, until otherwise proven that the market is in a downtrend, I think buying the dips makes sense. You know, when the overall trend of the market is down, you know, buying the dips doesn't necessarily make sense. But we are in a bull market.
You know, and even when the trend of the market is down, unless, as you point out, you extrapolate that it will go down forever, mm-hmm. buying the dips in 2007 and 2008 and 2009 was fairly painful. But had you done it a couple of years later, you were pretty happy you did it. It's just not always immediate gratification, as you point out. But the general idea of trying to put in money on pullbacks, along with an ongoing, you know, savings plan, makes perfect sense.
And the generally used method of adding money in the market is to wait until you feel good. Right, so it's not the calendar, you know, just adding money in on a regular basis. It's not buying the dips in different indicators. It's waiting till people feel good. And my sense is people still don't feel all that good, even though we've had a phenomenal run in the stock market. People still, they're thinking 2000 to 2002, they're thinking 2008, and you know, there's still a lot of nervous people out there. From a contrarian standpoint, that might suggest that this bull market keeps on going. But I do think this is one of those topics that advisors and clients can very much overthink this thing. They can tie themselves into knots and just miss the opportunity. The biggest risk from my standpoint, from my perspective, is they don't. they don't do anything, and they miss those opportunities to get money in the markets.
I think that's right. I mean, the big advantage of a calendar ad is that sometimes you might get a high, but a lot of times you'll just get some random entry point, or occasionally you'll get the low. If you wait until you feel good, you're going to get the high more often than not. And that obviously is very damaging to returns. And so I think having some kind of systematic method, however you do it, whether it's on the calendar or indicator-based, it has to be systematic, and you have to stick to it, and that'll really pay dividends over the long run. If you think about the market taking 3 to 4 dips a year, plus ongoing additions, 3 to 4 dips a year over a 20 to 30-year investing career is a lot of opportunities to put money to work. And that can really make a big difference for you and your clients in the long run.
Great. Well, I think that's a good place to end it. Thank you very much, Mike.